Genesis 2:19b and 20. And whatsoever the man called every living creature, that was the name thereof. And the man gave names to all cattle, and to the birds of the heavens, and to every beast of the field. But for man there was not found a helpmeet for him, to be before him. What an ocean of knowledge and wisdom there was in this one man! And although Adam lost much of this knowledge by sin, yet my full belief is that the whole contents of the books of all the wise, which have ever been written throughout all ages since letters first had birth, have not to this day equaled that wisdom which Adam possessed, even after his sin and fall. But all has become obscured by degrees in his posterity, and is well nigh extinct altogether. But we must here again note that Moses is still engaged describing the creation work and the divine transactions of the sixth day. For that which he had briefly said in the divine expression, "Let us make man," Genesis 1:26, he now more fully explains in this second chapter, in order that he might distinguish man from all other living creatures by more than one recorded testimony. Wherefore, he devotes this whole second chapter to a more particular explanation of the creation of man. With reference to the man, Moses has already said that he was made of the dust of the ground, and that the breath of life was breathed of God into his nostrils. He has also stated that the whole multitude of living creatures was brought before Adam. When Adam had seen among them all no helpmeet for him, woman was made to be his companion in the generation and preservation of the human species. For God did not will that the posterity of Adam should be made out of the ground as he himself was, but that it should be propagated as the other animals. As to our bodily life, we eat and drink, generate, and are generated just like all animals. However, Moses is greatly concerned in his thought to separate and distinguish man from all the animal creatures, because in this way the end is reached that after this earthly life, man should become a partaker of the spiritual and eternal life. Now all these things pertain, as we have just observed, unto the creation work of the sixth day. For as God had said, "Be fruitful and multiply," the explanation of the manner in which the woman was created and brought to Adam became a necessary part of the sacred narrative. All this is, moreover, intended to lead us into the firm belief and satisfaction of mind that 6 days were really occupied by God in his creation of all things, contrary to the opinion of Augustine and Hilary, who think that all things were created in a moment. To such an extent do they depart from the history of facts and follow allegories and indulge in I know not what kind of dreamy speculations. Nor do I speak these things by way of reproach to the holy fathers, whose labors we ought to venerate. I make these statements for the confirmation of the truth and for our own consolation. The fathers were great men, yet they were men, men who had fallen and still liable to fall. So that we have no ground for exalting ourselves like the monks, who worship all things belonging to themselves, as if they were not liable to fall. Whereas for my part, it is rather a great consolation to me than otherwise, that the fathers are discovered to have erred and fallen at times also, because my thoughts run thus. If God pardons sins and errors in them, why should I despair of pardon from him? On the other hand, despair immediately comes on if you begin to think that the fathers did not experience the same things which you feel and suffer. It is at the same time quite certain that there was a mighty difference between the call of the apostles and the call of the fathers. On what grounds, therefore, can we esteem the writings of the fathers equal to the writings of the apostles? But with special reference to the sacred passage of Moses before us, how, I pray you, is it possible that 6 days should be either a moment or an hour? Neither faith, which rests wholly in the Word, nor reason itself can admit this. Wherefore, let us be assured that there were between the divine acts of the creation certain intervals. Thus, Adam is first created alone. Then there are brought unto him all the animals, not only that he might name them, but that he might be tried, by seeing whether he could find in all this collection of creatures a meet companion. After this, Eve is created. Lastly, these words are spoken by the Lord, of every tree of the garden thou mayest freely eat, etc., which words struck the ears of Adam. All these things carry with them a proof that they occurred at certain intervals of time, unless indeed you would turn away like Origen from such plain and positive historical facts to the most absurd allegories. For Moses is not here giving us a record of God himself, in whose sight all things past, present, and future are ever present in the same moment, but he is recording a history of Adam, a creature of time, who was made and who lived, and with whom, as a creature, there is a difference between the present and the future. I have deemed it right to bring these things to your recollection by this repetition. Now, let us proceed with Moses.